offer him an easy out. He had to face the accusation she had just uttered, words that had come from the insights of Mieliki, from a common place in the hearts of Drizzt and Catti Bree. He wanted to believe that Obul's actions were wrought of noble intent. He wanted to believe that an orc, or a goblin like Nozheim, could rise above the reputation of their respective races, because if they could, then so could he, and so conversely, if he could, then so could, or so should, they. "The goblinkin are not people," Catti Bree said. "Not human, not drow, nor any other race. You cannot judge them and cannot treat them by or from those perspectives."
"You darned right," Brunner put in. "Dwarves have known it for centuries."
"Yet you signed the treaty,"
Regis said. And all eyes flashed at the halfling, Brunner's scowl most prominent of all. But that glare was met by a wide, teasing, and ultimately infectious smile.
"Watch yourself a bit more of the intestinal fortitude this time around, did ye?"
Brunner asked. Regis winked and grinned.
"Let's go kill some orcs."
Any anger Brunner might have had about the comment washed away instantly at that invitation.
"Bwahaha!" he roared, and clapped Regis on the back.
"The trails will open soon, and we can navigate them in any case,"
Catti Bree said.
"To Mithril Hall, then?"
"Aye," said Brunner.
But as he spoke, he looked at Wulfgar. The barbarian had left the companions of the hall in the days of Obuld, after all, returning to his first home and people on the tundra of Icewind Dale.
"Aye,"
Wulfgar heartily replied.
"Ye got no mind to stay with your folks, then?"
Brunner asked bluntly.
"I return to fight beside Drizzt and the rest of you,"
Wulfgar said, completely at ease.
"For adventure! For battle! Let us play!"
Drizzt noted Catti Bree's stare coming his way. He shared her surprise, and a pleasant surprise it was for both of them.
"Mithril Hall,"
Drizzt agreed.
"Not straight away," Brunner declared. "We got other business, then,"
he explained, nodding with every word.
"We got a friend in trouble, elf, one ye saw and left to die."
Drizzt looked at him curiously. Brunner went to the side of the room, bent and reached under his cot, and brought forth a familiar helmet, shield, and axe. The others were not surprised, but Drizzt, who had been too groggy and dazed that night on Kelvin's cairn to fully register Brunner's garb, surely was. For in light of the tales he had heard of his companion's rebirth, he understood what they meant. Brunner had visited his own grave.
"Except our friend was already dead,"
Brunner explained.
"And not as strong as he thinked himself."
"Pwent," Drizzt breathed. Only then remembering the poor fellow. He had found Pwent outside of Neverwinter, outside of Gauntlegrim, inflicted with vampirism, and had left the dwarf in a cave awaiting the sunrise to end his curse.
"What of him?"
Catti Bree asked.
"He's in Gauntlegrim, killing drow,"
said Brunner.
"That would make him happy,"
Regis remarked. And then with surprise, breathlessly added,
"Gauntlegrim?"
"Cursed as a vampire," Drizzt explained.
"Aye, and I ain't for leaving him,"
said Brunner.
"You mean to kill him?"
Wulfgar asked. Brunner shrugged, but Drizzt turned to Catti Bree. "Is there another way?" The woman matched Brunner's shrug with a helpless one of her own. She was a priestess, but surely no expert in the issues regarding undeath, a realm foreign to, and indeed contrary to, the tenets of Mieliki.
"Gauntlegrim?"
Regis asked again.
"Aye, we found it,"
said Brunner.
"In the crags north of Neverwinter. Pwent's there, lost and dead, and so are some drow. and I ain't much liking that thought of them folk with the forge of me ancestors.
We'll find our answers along the road, then, said Catty Bree.
Jarlaxle's in Luskin,
Regis remarked, and the others perked up at that name. But Catty Bree was thinking along other lines, Drizzt realized, for now she was shaking her head. She mouthed, Long Saddle. Drizzt couldn't hide his astonishment, for the home of the Harples was not a place that typically inspired confidence.
Chapter 3 The Festival of the Founding.
And now you understand why I have never bothered to hunt Drizzt O'Urden down and kill him,
Gromph said to Quenthel when they were back at the Vaenry compound, and the matron mother had recovered from the Illithid's attack.
The goddess uses him,
Quenthel nodded. She was not smiling, though, Gromph noted, and given the memories, the core of Ivanel, which Methil had imparted to his sister, the archmage doubted that he would ever see her smile again, unless it was from the pleasure of exacting pain upon another. He noted his sister's pensive pose, so similar to the one his mother often used to wear, and one he had never before seen from the inferior Quenthel.
Why tempt him,
she asked,
with so many other greater needs arising all about us? Why now?
A good question, the archmage thought, and one he had discussed at length with Minolin Fay just the previous 10 days. The Spider Queen was expanding her power now, in the realm of the gods, not among mere mortals. So why would she bother with a rogue drow of such little real importance or consequence?
That is a matter for priestesses, not wizards, he replied.
Quenthel narrowed her eyes, for she understood now, of course, the direction of Loth's designs, a course that surely elevated Gromph and his wizardly ilk.
And you have spoken to priestesses, one in particular, she reminded him, and about this very topic.
Gromph sat up straighter behind his desk, matching his sister's intense stare with careful scrutiny of his own.
My dear sister, he started.
Never call me that again,
she interrupted, her voice even and confident and clearly threatening.
Matron Mother Quenthel, he corrected.
Gromph brought his hands up to tap-tap his fingers before his pursed lips, his typical